Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 51 of ZK Live. I am Zach Kenny from ZK Painting. This is my first attempt at using my fancy microphone, so I'm hoping the audio is still good. I just did a test. Audio should be good. Hopefully, this will sound better on the podcast later. I'm hoping that this will work to do all the interviews that we do going forward. I have this fancy mic that I had to get. I had to buy a couple different dongles to fit to my iPhone to be able to power this thing, but we're good. So happy Sunday, everybody. It's a ridiculous thing to say, but I'm here. I just got back from my brother's birthday this time at my mom's house. Now the COVID restrictions have changed. We are all wearing masks indoors. With five of us at my mom's house, we're still wearing masks. Trying to hope this whole thing goes away. But it's Sunday night. We have some questions to answer. We're going to talk about what's going on at ZK Painting a little bit. I'm definitely fresher than I was last Sunday after finishing school, where I was exhausted. I think last Sunday was finishing school. It's all a blur these days. But we have some good questions. Again, if you have questions, there's a little question mark. It's within a bubble at the bottom. Please type your questions there. I didn't bring my iPad today, so I can't project the logo behind my head. So we just have this beautiful black TV screen. But, you know, it is what it is. Baby steps. I'm working on getting a ZK Live logo. Don't know exactly what it's going to look like yet, but we'll get there. But again, if you have questions, put them down at the bottom. We had a great week this week. Right now we have a number of projects going on in the shop. If any of you saw my story, we have some metal riglets that we're using an etching primer on, and we're going to be priming with Fine Paints of Europe primer after that, and then Fine Paints of Europe wall paint on these little metal riglets. We have a couple of entry doors we're doing. We have we have a new cabinet project that just came in. It's a wine bar that we're doing in a black color. It's really cool. Phil and Hollis are out on the Cape Cod, and they are working on brushing a bunch of Holland Lac satin on a kitchen and living room area. So super duper prep. The client is as particular of a client as we've ever had. Those are our favorite clients, because that's what we like to do, is work for people who want things very, very precise and very, very neat and perfect, as close to perfect as possible. So Phil and Hollis are out there working on that. We have that cabinet project in Andover. I have, fingers crossed, I've never been this nervous. There's a project that I'm really hoping that we get in Newport for a ceiling restoration. I posted that video of dry ice blasting. So I really hope we get that dry ice blasting project for a number of reasons. Mostly, one of the main ones is it's just incredibly cool, and I really, really love making beautiful spaces. And so we have an amazing paint stain schedule that's going to result in an amazing and beautiful outcome. We're going to be using dry ice, if we get the project, which I would hope we'll hear any day. We're going to be dry ice blasting, sanding, using two coats of shellac, four coats of marine yacht varnish for UV protection, and then two coats of urethane satin varnish over the top. So it's an eight coat schedule after blasting. But the shellac makes the wood glow. Shellac adds chatoyancy. I'm not sure if that's how you say the word, but it's like that iridescent 3D look that wood and gemstones can have. Chatoyancy, chatoyancy. I have to look up how that's pronounced. But shellac as your base coat on wood makes it glow through whatever other clear coat you put over the top. Just a little trick I learned from Robert from Bespoke Finishes. Shellac is an awesome way to start your ceiling and make the wood really glow. So that project's I'm waiting to hear back. Really nervous. Super cool. We just did some disinfecting this week. My country club had another COVID employee have test positive for COVID, so we went in and we sprayed the whole place. We're able to do that really effectively, and we're fast at it now. And you can put a lot of product on with those Santa sprays from Graco, so that's really cool. Let's see. Oh, we have a wine room that we're doing. Unfortunately, we can't post pictures of this gorgeous walnut wine room. Oh man, walnut has got to be my favorite wood. It's so beautiful. The grain, Zerner Design, based out of Rhode Island here, they did all of the woodwork, and it is immaculate. And so Patty started it. Tomorrow, Patty and Caroline are going to be finishing the sanding. We're using 180 grit by machine, and then we're hand sanding everything with the grain after with 180 grit. And then we're going to be using a wiping stain, and we're going to be using crystal conversion varnish from ML Campbell. So really excited about that. That one has to get done for Thanksgiving. I'm sure a number of you guys on here probably have those Thanksgiving deadlines. Deadlines like that are always nerve-wracking because they're pretty permanent. You know, people have to have Thanksgiving and they want their places done. And so we have one project right now that has a Thanksgiving deadline. And it's definitely, we have a plan, but the carpenters were behind schedule a bit. So we've been a bit delayed, but we have a plan and we're going to execute on that plan and do the best we can with what we have, as Jessica Allred always says. So that one's really cool. I'll probably post some progress photos of the work from the shop because they're not specific to the house. They're going to be zoomed in pictures of some beautiful wood. And I have to think that that's going to be okay. We're not talking about where the client lives, or it's a beautiful, beautiful home. One of those houses that has a name, these estates, these beautiful, beautiful mansions in Newport, a lot of them have names to the house. I bid two projects this week, two big new construction projects, and both of those homes had names as well. So that's how you know you've made it in life. It's one of the ways you might know that you've made it in life is when you build a new house or buy a house and it has a name. I probably will never own a home with a name. Maybe I'll just name my house. Maybe I should do that. Might add value to the home. But man, Newport, Rhode Island has some beautiful, beautiful mansions. The old mansions that were built and these beautiful homes that are being built now. And we're really lucky to be involved in some of those projects and hopefully more of them. So very exciting. Someone had asked a question. Please, any questions that you have, put them. There's a little question mark in a bubble at the bottom. Use that to put your questions in so that I can pop them up and we can read them and I don't have to scroll back and try to remember that there's a question. We have a number of questions tonight. So let's see. That's what we have going on at the shop. I'm trying to think. There's got to be something else I'm missing. There's a lot going on. I couldn't do it without my amazing team. My amazing assistant, Carney, fills in all the gaps and keeps this thing running. We're getting more efficient. We're going to start getting some real systems in place. But let's get into the questions now. Let's start at the bottom. Have you ever done any projects in Cohasset, brah? I consulted on a project in Cohasset. Cohasset is a beautiful place in Massachusetts. Gorgeous homes on the water and around. It's near the water. I helped make a stain schedule for an exterior project for a builder up there, but we did not actually do the work ourselves. We have not done a project in Cohasset yet. On to the next one. Ooh, this is a fun one. This guy probably has not been following me for very long, if he follows me. Ben Baxter asks, who's your favorite paint supplier and why? Paint supplier, maybe that distributor? Let's talk about Adler's. So Adler's Paint is where we buy our paint. It's a small family-owned paint store. We're really lucky. I would encourage all of you who run painting companies to develop strong relationships with your paint dealers. I think whoever's selling you your paint, that relationship should be strong. It should be a give and take. As in all relationships, we should give as often as possible, depositing the emotional into the emotional bank account, if you will, from who wrote Seven Habits of Highly Effective People? I forget that guy's name, but that's a great book. And that idea of depositing into emotional bank accounts is huge. But I have a very strong relationship with my paint supplier, Adler's. They're called Adler's Hardware. It's a small A-D-L-E-R-S, Adler's. That's where we buy our paint. And we primarily, I would say 90% of the paint that we are using, almost 99% of all one part products that we use come from Fine Paints of Europe. As many of you have, I've probably said the word Fine Paints of Europe more than I've said the word paint in my life at this point. So FPE is definitely by far our preferred paint manufacturer. I'm not sure if that's what he means by supplier, but the team of people at Adler's who service our accounts, mix us paint, deliver. We had a bunch of paint delivered to our shop this week. It's so nice. I have the owner of Adler's phone number, and I can text. We text back and forth a lot, and I can text him orders and call him, and they'll bend over backwards for us. And it's such a powerful thing to have your paint supplier have your back like that. And we get leads from and referrals from our paint supplier as well. And we work hard to maintain that relationship as a two-way street. So we buy all of our Fine Paints of Europe from him, from Adler's, and as much stuff as we can from them. Cause they're small, they don't have a large like warehouse. It's like down in a basement of this old building they've been at. They're a 100-year-old company. So we love Adler's. I can go in there, I can call Harry and get information. You know, it's just great to not just be a number at Sherwin-Williams where you're like, just go in and like, you know, which I was for a long time and people just don't care. Developing a relationship with whoever you buy your paint from is a very powerful thing, and will pay dividends when you're in, when you have a problem, if you need anything, it's good to have that relationship. So thank you for the question. Oh man, I did it again. I meant to print out the reviews for the podcast. Again, next question and answer. Next Sunday, someone asked me the question next Sunday. One of the reviews, I have to remember this, make a note for myself, but I never remember this. Oh, here's a good one. Wild Iris Music. Wild_Iris_Music. What sets Fine Paints of Europe interior wall paint apart? This is a great question. And I think it looks beautiful. The number one thing, when we paint walls for a client in Fine Paints of Europe, Eurolux, which is their interior wall line, usually we use matte, sometimes we use flat. When you paint a wall in Eurolux matte, it is beautiful. The room glows the color of the paint. So when you take out the fillers in the paint, Fine Paints of Europe doesn't add fillers to their paint. That's why it costs more money. It's pure paint. But when you take out those fillers and you apply high quality resin with a high quality pigment, you get beautiful color reflection back into the room. And contrast that with domestic paint that is thinned down. It's with not water, but they use fillers to fill the paint that's cheap. Things that are not expensive, like clay, talc, mica, a number of like inert things that fill the gallon. Those add porosity. So the light will die in the porosity of the paint. It's not as smooth. If you feel Fine Paints of Europe wall paint, it's very, very smooth. I attribute it's more like porcelain. And so when the light reflects and hits the surface, it's smooth and it bounces right back. When you have a porous surface, it's like a picture of a sponge. Light reflects into the sponge and it dies in those pores and doesn't reflect out as true. So I just had a client recently who was gushing about the wall paint and how the wall the room just glowed, and he loved the wall paint. They did all these amazing things to the house, and he was loving the wall paint. So it really does amazing things. Never mind the durability, the washability is phenomenal. Even with the flat paint, which is unheard of, their flat paint, you can burnish it and then wipe it up, wipe it down, and it'll look like brand new. You're not going to like make scuff marks in it. I've seen like ketchup and mustard smeared into the flat wall paint and then wiped off with a sponge. You can't do that with most flat wall paints. I don't know of any flat wall paint you could feel confident about putting in a high traffic area. But that's the beauty of high quality raw ingredients. And that's what the price of paint. Again, can you put your questions down at the bottom where there's a little question thing? And I'll get to your questions, but this way I can see them later and pop them up and we can talk about them rather than put them in the comments. Thank you, Cameron. But when you have pure paint and the wrong, that's what you pay for. We're paying for resin, pigments, and binder, right? And that's what we're putting on a wall. And so the higher quality raw ingredients you have, no problem, Cameron. It just, this way I can get to it later. And pop it up and I don't have to go scroll back through the comments. But high quality pigments, they're more for UV protection on, so that's not wall paint, but exterior paint. We like the high quality pigments. The great analogy that Fine Paints used and that helped me understand why their pigments are superior is imagine a pitch black table. And you were trying to cover that black and not see it with salt. And you were to use table salt, finely ground table salt. And you could cover that black table and not see black, only see white, with a very thin amount of table salt, right? Because the particle size is very small. And then if we were trying to cover that same table with rock salt, we would have to put a thicker layer of rock salt because the particle size is large, so that we could see true white and not see any black through that rock salt. So particle size is very important when we talk about pigments. So when you add high quality pigments, which cost more money when they're finely ground, that is going to make for a better color retention. It's going to make for a more durable coating, and it's going to make so that the light reflects out, the color reflects off that surface more true and better than with a less with an inferior quality pigment. So pigment is important, and raw ingredients, you know, obviously we want to put pure paint on the wall. We don't want to put clay on the wall. We all know flat ceiling paint, right, is mostly just clay. It's, you know, it's like when it dries, it feels like sandpaper. You get some water, it'll just suck up the water. You know, when you put paint over a ceiling paint, right, it just like sucks it up, versus when you put it over like, you know, a high quality primer from Fine Paints or from a satin wall paint. A high quality satin wall paint is going to not absorb as much of that next coat of paint. You know, if anyone has ever tried to paint finish paint over, or even primer over, say, cheap ceiling paint, you just have to use a lot more paint to spread and cover an area, versus if you use a high quality primer, and the paint will spread and you can use less paint. And that's because of the raw ingredients. So we care a lot about what goes in, what our paint is made of, because most of what we do is labor. Most of my price is labor. If a client pays $10,000 for a job, generally about $8,000 of that goes to pay for labor, and about $22,000 would go to materials. So labor is the most expensive part of painting. So we really want to use the highest quality paint we can, because even if we doubled the price of the paint, it's a marginal increase to the overall cost of a job. Meanwhile, we might double the life expectancy of a project, which price per year, it becomes much cheaper to use better paint. And that's how we sell it, because I think it's a great value to clients to use high quality paint when the labor stays the same and is a majority of the cost. So that's why we use it. It looks better, it feels better, and it lasts longer. There's three quick bullet points and the reasons why it's high quality raw ingredients. Again, I think Michael Mumford, can you put your question in the question box at the bottom? There's a little question mark. That will help me get to your question and put it up for everybody. I don't want to answer questions from the comments. It just makes it harder. And I like to be able to put the question up. But I did see... Yes, light refraction. That's a great technical term. John from Paint School. I brought that up. Uh-oh, I turned the heat on downstairs when I got to the shop a minute ago. And I might end up just being beet red and baking in a minute. If I hope it turns itself off. Here we go. My buddy at Seacoast Builders has a good question. Is that a TV behind you or your finish? That is not a black high gloss wall. Although it does look like some of our work. Although it's got a little bit of distort, a little fuzziness to it. But no, that is a TV that is usually powered on, and I have my iPad next to me, and it's mirror screen, and it's projecting. But right now, I didn't bring my iPad tonight. It's at home, so I have a black screen behind me. Shame on me. I will be better next time. Ooh, yes. Phil says, you could say that you're overpaying for the cheaper ingredients in your cheap paints. There's lots of ways to look at it, but I always tell everyone, like, unless you're going to burn this, if this is a set for like a play, and you're going to literally just like disassemble what you painted in 2 weeks, you should be trying to use the most expensive paint you can get your hands on that you can possibly afford. Because the labor is the majority of our costs. And so I think that as painters and as a society of people, we need to change. No. America, I'm asking you, stop caring about the price of paint so much. And in Sherwin-Williams, you could go in and you see all these price points. And people are like, what does it cost per gallon? Oh, what does it cost per gallon? The price per gallon of paint should not be nearly as important as it is in our society today. That is my platform. I'm running for election. Please elect me. I'm going to run on the price of paint should not be as important as it is. Honestly, it shouldn't. Labor is a majority of what we do. Let's think about this from a bigger picture. And I think most of our clients, I mean, all of my clients, but most clients will understand that when you explain to them why paint costs a little bit more. Yeah, I definitely would lose the election if that's what I wrote. If that's my, that was my platform. ZK 2024. Oh man, I think you have to be a sicko to want to be a politician. That's not a thankless job. I would never want to do that. I get to choose who I work for. And when you work for the people, you don't get to do that. Let's see. We have lots of questions tonight. I'm just going to keep touching them and then we'll see what happens. Wait, well, if I start at the bottom, well, this guy just put it in, but we'll get to all the questions. Michael Mumford asks, do you run a Titan ED655? If so, do you like it? What do you think about using it for Ilva 2K Poly? Yes, we do run an ED655. I do like it, and I think it works great for Ilva 2K Poly. Bang, bang, bang. Warner, can you please put your questions at the question box thing at the bottom at the little question mark, and I'll get to it. So the ED655 is a diaphragm pump. It's not a piston pump. I don't know exactly what I mean. I know that there's not a piston that goes up and down and creates pressure. Something about there's a diaphragm that I think it might go like this. And it pressurizes the paint. I don't know. I have to look at how they're actually built. But a diaphragm pump runs constantly. So once you plug in an ED65 and you get it up to pressure, it runs constantly. It doesn't just hold pressure. It's not super powerful at ED655. Like you wouldn't want to spray out a bunch of a ton of product and a huge house. Like it's not like a, I mean, a 440 can put a lot more paint out per minute and it's probably a little more powerful of a pump, but an ED655 is a great little pump for doing smaller projects. Airless wise, it's definitely a great pump. Nothing but good things to say about that little guy. They make some noise. They're a little finicky. They're very, like, you have to like make sure they're cleaned well. But yeah, they are great pumps. I would recommend them if you're not trying to do large amounts of stuff and you don't want to get into using a cup gun. Yes, it keeps a very consistent pressure. I don't know. Maybe Phil can answer this. But I believe you can dial in, and they're inexpensive. I believe you can dial in the pressure much lower. I'd love to do a test. I'm not sure how low you can dial in the pressure on an ED, but I know, I'm quite certain you can keep a consistent pressure at a much lower PSI than you can with a piston pump, electric piston pump, say a 440 or a 395 or something like that, which has a lot of advantages as well. So, yes, thank you for your question, Michael. Here we go. A Carvey 10 asks, when asked to do extras or high-end jobs, what is your hourly rate? So, I think hourly rate, it's the same for everything. Hourly rate, while we don't charge by the hour on most of our jobs, Phil, we have to test to see how low of PSI we can get ED655 to hold consistent pressure on. We don't charge hourly for a lot of our projects, but when I estimate how many hours will this take, and I multiply times a coefficient, which would be our hourly rate. So I think no matter how you look at it, you're charging for your labor and you're figuring how many hours. And so you end up with an hourly rate. We are right now, we are trying to be at $75 an hour. We raised our hourly rate. We have state-of-the-art equipment, highly skilled, highly motivated people who are paid very well. So at $75 an hour, I think we are a great value. But that comes down to supply and demand. And if we can stay busy at $75 an hour, then we're worth $75 an hour. If we can't stay busy at $75 an hour, we have to lower our rate, do more marketing, something like that. But $75 is where we are trying to be at today to cover all of our... We have a fairly decent size overhead for the size of our company. We have the shop, the spray booth, a lot of expensive equipment. We have highly skilled, well-paid employees. So $75 is where we're at. I did not get a new phone, but I got a super-duper headset and microphone. So I hope you're asking that question because the audio is so much better today. Is that right, Paint Finisher? Fingers crossed. I'm hoping that the audio is better than the iPhone audio. We were having some audio issues in the interviews lately. So I'm hoping that this fixes those issues because this is a really cool microphone. No matter what, it just looks cool. I mean, come on, guys.
Look at that thing.
And now, from hailing, I feel like I should be like announcing a boxing match. It should be like hanging upside down. Let's see. And now, no, sorry, guys. What equipment do we mean? Oh, so that's a really good question. Let me try. How's this? This is, oh man. I don't know if I like it better this way or the other way. So there's like some like reverberation where you could hear back, and I've always done this. Maybe I could just do this. Now that I've started it, I'm going to finish like this because it feels weird to not keep doing this. But maybe the next podcast I'll try to just talk. But now my brain is used to hearing. I can kind of hear myself in a certain way here. When I take it off, I hear myself differently, and it's freaking me out. So, but this microphone is an AKG. That's all it says. It says AKG. And it looks like this. Yeah, plus I just look more... Do you trust what I'm saying more when I have headsets on, right? I feel like I'm more official with the headset, but just less official with no background. So I have to, you know, keep it balanced. This is an AKG. It allows you, with this thing, it allows you to change... These are backwards, but... the microphone pattern and the microphone gain, which when I don't know exactly what those mean, but yes. Oh, guys, sorry. It is raining, and you could probably hear the rain better with this good microphone, unfortunately. But I have a metal building that we're in, and I'm on the second floor, so when it rains or when the acorns fall, it's quite... I mean, you're just like every single time, you're like, whoa. But cost of doing business when you know, it is what it is. This is the best shop we can afford at the time, and it fits our needs, but sorry, you have to hear the rain. Yes, so that's the microphone. But you can't use it when you do a talk. So this is, I'm going to use the headset when I interview somebody so that I can hear them back. All of the stuff should go through this. That's how I've done. When I was doing them on the PCA's Facebook, when we were doing Facebook Live interviews, I was using this on my laptop. And it took me a couple different iPhone dongles to get the right setup where I could plug this into my iPhone. And I just found out it worked 2 seconds ago. But yes, I'm an astronaut, and I'm out in space right now. What you see behind me is actually just the universe. It actually kind of, technically, that is the universe, huh? All right. So, yes, $75 an hour. That's what we're trying to be at. I want to continue. I would love to continue to raise that. My goal is in the next 2 years that we're up to $85-$95 an hour. That would be amazing. Obviously, that's going to keep our team smaller, which it's always evolving. But at this point right now, I do want to keep my team under 10 people, 10 painters. I can manage 10 painters. I can manage 5 leads that have an apprentice, 5 two-person teams. Anything past 10 painters, I would have to hire someone to manage the people. And that adds a whole bunch of complexity. That adds a bunch of overhead where I couldn't just go to 12 with a person managing. I have to go to like, I don't know, John knows this stuff better, but I probably have to go to like 16 people with someone managing and myself to be able to be profitable again. So I like this sweet spot of under 10. And if I continue to build demand, we continue to get more efficient as a company, we can begin to raise our hourly rates a little bit more, as we will add more value in that same hour to people. So that's kind of how I look at it. Allstate Paint Place says, thoughts on Benmore Paint. We are currently hiring for a new apprentice to work with Phil and Hollis. So anybody out there, we're putting it out into the ether. This is the secret, right? You say it and then it will happen. We are looking for another awesome individual to come join our team and work with Phil and Hollis. So thoughts on Benmore Paint. It's good stuff. You get what you pay for. They make some great products. I'll never bash a paint company. They all make... Actually, I will. I will bash PPG. I do not think anybody should buy paint from PPG. And not because the paint's not good, but because they are in competition with painters. And you don't want to buy paint from someone who also sells paint jobs. So as long as they continue to do that with the Paint Zen thing, that company they bought and what they're doing, I don't think we should support PPG. I'm not going out on a limb saying that. I think that's a very safe platform. And anyone who knows anything about, I don't know a ton, but I know enough to know that PPG is in some way competing with painters for paint jobs. And I don't want to buy paint from somebody who also paints. That doesn't make sense to me. So if you're buying from PPG, let's talk or talk to someone that knows something, but I don't know why. They're coming for you. You're in competition with them. But Ben Moore, you know what I really like? I like ScuffX. I like Advance. I like the trim paints. You know, for the price, they're good stuff. Yeah, the Home Depot too. Like you could go there and they'll sell you the paint and then they'll sell you people to do the work. And, you know, and they want a commission. And I don't want to support, I'm not sure if they do that with painting, but I know they do it with like roofing and all those things. They probably do it with painting too. So I don't want to buy paint from somebody who's also selling paint jobs. That just doesn't make sense to me. I want our interests aligned, and I don't want to be competing against the guy I'm buying paint from. There's a guy, I think there's a guy who owns a Ben Moore store here, whose like brother owns a paint company. Ugh, that's a little sketchy. Benjamin Moore Ultra Flat Ceiling Paint. Phil is a big fan. So they make some good products. Like, you know, and so does Sherwin-Williams, honestly. Yes. Hey, buddy. John said, hey, buddy, I want to sell you the paint, and then I want to take your job. Like, what are we talking about, guys? We should all boycott PPG. Please. Okay. Michael Mumford has a follow-up question. I wish... There's something wrong with this where you can't see the question any longer. I can't see the full question when I post it here, but it says, can you explain the best you can on how to make an air-assisted airless with an ED-655 and a compressor. If you know anything about that. I do know something about that. I know people who have done it, and I know how I would do it if I was going to do it. The way you would do that is you would get a air-assisted airless gun. So you would get a Wagner 655 or 4700. That's the gun. If you're going to buy one gun, air-assisted airless gun, I'm definitely a convert. The Wagner 4700 GC, I think it's called. That's the best air-assisted airless gun on the market, in my opinion, today. And or it could be a Graco G40. It could be a Kremlin Excite gun. I think Binks makes one as well. You get yourself an air-assisted airless gun, right? That's the most expensive part of this equation, pretty much like that. You're $8,000 to $1,000 for a good air assisted airless gun. The gun is where the magic happens, so you want to spend for that. That Wagner gun is amazing. I would do that. So I get that gun, and then you would run the paint hose from your ED-655. You would run it to a regulator that would tell you the PSI, so that you could adjust the pressure. Because I don't think the ED-655 has a It won't tell you what the PSI is. Maybe it will. I've never actually used it before. But you need to get a regulator that will tell you what the PSI is. And then you need to get a compressor. This is the most important part with compressors. I've said this before, but if you haven't heard it. CFM. Cubic feet per minute. That is how we determine whether or not an air compressor is sufficient for the paint sprayer that we are using. So you would go and you'd find out what is the CFM rating for a Wagner gun or for a G40 gun or whatever. Look up the gun, find out how many CFM, how much air volume does that gun need to produce a good finish. And then you would get that size compressor and you would run that compressor to a filter. Not that little filter they sell at Home Depot that you can like turn that little clear thing. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about like an automotive air filter, something that's going to filter out the water and most importantly, the oil. Actually, both are very important. Water and the oil from the air, because you want clean air when you're spraying these finishes, right? So then you would run your compressor to a filter to that gun. And now you would have a Frankenstein air-assisted airless. Unless you already have the gun, I would probably just call Total Finishing Solutions and get that before they run out. That deal they have right now at Total Finishing Supplies for the 14-to-1 air-powered air-assisted airless unit with a Wagner gun. That's a tremendous deal. And if we didn't have so many paint sprayers, that's what I would do. If I was going to get an air-assisted airless for some, if I was starting from scratch, I would go to Total Finishing Supplies and I would get that because that is a one heck of a deal. I think it's $2,200 and it's on a cart. I wouldn't buy the one that has the compressor. I don't think that's a good deal at all. They want like $1,200 more for the compressor to be attached. And I know for a fact that whatever that compressor is not a $1,200 compressor. You can get the kind of compressor we're talking about for $450. I would recommend the Rollair VT25 Big. But you get the cart. It's $2,200, not the $2,000 for no cart. Unless you're going to put it on the wall in a shop. But the cart is very handy. So I hope that answers your question. I hope that completes your question. Does anybody on here listen to Seth Godin's podcast, Akimbo? It is my favorite podcast by far. And I love the way he says, and I hope that completes your question. I think that's what he says. But his cadence is tremendous. All right, C.W. Warner. Oh, man, I'm roasting here. C.W. Warner says, any specific resources to learn about coatings? Well, let's see. I have a book. I have a few paint books over there. Understanding Wood Finishes. That's a seminal book in the paint industry. Understanding Wood Finishes. We have Painter's Handbook. Ooh, I have one that I've not really looked at. I'm going to be right back, guys. Let's look at these books. Boom. Let's go over some reading. There's lots of info, but so I have not read this book yet. But here's a book about paint. It's called Paints and Coatings Handbook, Second Edition. Holy crap. This thing is dense. You want to learn about paints and coatings? Here you go. You don't want to read this book? Come to ZK Finishing School. We'll teach you in a much more easy to learn way. I think you can listen to a lot of these podcasts. You can learn a lot. I would recommend getting a paint rep. If you're lucky enough. Sorry, I know we're not all, but if you're lucky enough to find a good paint rep, and here's what I would say. Sherwin-Williams, you're going to be hitting a lottery to get an amazing paint rep. Or you're going to get lucky. Home Depot, you're going to get hitting the lottery to get a good paint rep that knows their stuff. I would imagine. I never bought paint from them, but let's see. A commercial wood finishes supplier, right? Like I buy my 2K Poly from a local company and they sell to big manufacturers. My paint rep from Camdra Coatings is incredibly knowledgeable. This guy knows his stuff when it comes to wood finishes. So you can learn a lot from a good rep as well. All right, so here's another book we have. I've read through this one a bit. This one's called Understanding Wood Finishes, How to Select and Apply the Right Finish by Bob Flexner. This is actually a very good book. It's not so big. It's got lots of pictures and step-by-steps. It's a good book. Understanding Wood Finishes. That's a good one. These books, they cost? $20-$30? They're valuable. If you're a professional, you should be learning. These are good things. This is called Spray Finishing Made Simple. I would say read it. Like, yeah, there's a lot of stuff that's kind of basic, but also, if you're a brush guy and you haven't gotten a spraying, like, this is a great book. And it's not too bad. It's mostly pictures and very easy step-by-step things. Good book to have. There's another one called The Paint Contractor's Manual. This one is not as much about coatings. It's more about running a painting business. But super dense, and really, it is a great book. And you can buy these all of these on eBay probably for not too much. Here's another one we have, The Painter's Handbook. So the answer is books. You can learn a lot from books. I love books. Books are amazing. One of the greatest things that humans ever did was start writing things down. And then get a good rep and talk to the paint manufacturers and all those things. Come to ZK Finishing School. But most reps want to talk about subjective things. They don't want to talk about the details. They don't want to talk about objective paint-based science things. I've really struggled with that in my career. And you can check out Phil's page, my page, all the painters on here. Like, that's the beauty of social media is we're all connected. I'm sitting here, we're talking about paint all night. What's better than that? Before I talked about paint all by myself in my room and no one listened. No, that's not true. I didn't talk about it. Here's something I've never done before, but I know a lot of people are doing this, and this is where I would reach out to other painters. But Katie by the Seaside, hi Katie, says, we as to the best way to paint a wall, popcorn ceiling intersection. Oh, I didn't read this question all the way. Can't tape the popcorn ceiling and hate taping. Oh man, I can't see the rest of that question. Instagram needs to figure that out. Anybody have a trick to seeing the entire question on large questions here? I don't know. Let me bring that back up. Sorry, Katie. The first step to the equation of a good cut line on popcorn ceiling, which I will say I've not done a lot of, but I've done a little bit of it. The first step is cleaning that edge with like a putty knife. Like I like to take like a putty knife and like scrape the wall up into the 90 degree edge. Scrape, 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 scrape. That will get you a nice flat, and then maybe take some sandpaper and sand that the wall. So you don't have pieces of popcorn on your wall, right? That joint is nice and is clean. And then when you paint the ceiling, bring the ceiling paint down onto the wall by, you know, whatever, half an inch. And now when you go to cut the ceiling, don't cut all the way at the very, very top. Maybe come down an eighth of an inch and cut your line with the wall paint, the ceiling paint coming down, so that the ceiling paint comes down as far as the popcorn comes down, right? Now, there's people who paint a lot of popcorn probably have better answers than this, because I haven't painted a cut over popcorn in a long time. But if I was going to do it and I wanted straight lines, this is what I would do. And I would take my ceiling paint down far enough where I could then set how high the wall paint line goes. And I would cut my line with enough of the ceiling paint so that I don't go up into that 90 degree. And because even if you cut a perfect line and the popcorn comes down, and well, then the eye will see the popcorn go, the rough surface of popcorn up, down, up, down, up, down. And we'll see white protruding down from your wall paint in a weird way. Right? So we'd rather have the wall paint line come down a little bit. Same thing can go with when you're painting trim, like on a baseboard. You can take the wall paint line and bring it up an eighth of an inch off that baseboard if you have an old weird baseboard. Draw your own line. Don't let the ceiling dictate where your line is drawn. Yes, DiBiase, I agree. I think that oftentimes we should be drawn in these weird situations. We have really bad, if it's not a crisp 90 degree beautiful thing straight, draw your own line. if you painted in old houses and stuff, you know, and baseboards and stuff, you can't, if you just followed the baseboard, you'd have this crazy jagged line, where it's better to just draw your own line higher up onto the ceiling. The eye will only see the line and won't necessarily see that you didn't follow the baseboard to a T. So thank you for your question. Heritage Valley Pro Painters, you should come. We have yet to have somebody from Canada, and we would love to have you. We have a little board where we're putting people's, the states where people are from. And we would love to fill that up and get Canada down here, too. And Carney is the person to talk to. ZKFinishingSchool@gmail.com. It wouldn't run without Carney. She's amazing. Oh, here's another one from Katie. All Miami customers want gray and white colors. Over it. What's the next hot color combo? Well, first of all, I don't care what color you want to paint, client. I'm here for you to make the space beautiful, beautiful for you. Right? I think that's that. I understand what you're saying, but I think the mindset, the most important thing is that we serve our clients. So, you know, whatever color the client wants, but that's neither here nor there. That's not your question. And I am not a color trend expert. I do what the designers tell me to do. And yeah, grays are big. I think navy is timeless. I was just talking with an architect this week and he agrees. He was the one saying it and I agreed with him. Navy is a timeless color. I'm trying to think, what have we been doing for walls? We just did like a beige on some walls. For designers, we've been doing a lot of white, and then it depends on the designer. And then there's some blues, definitely different shades of blue. I don't know. We do whatever the designer or the client wants. I'm probably not the best person to answer what the next hot color combo is. Oh, that's a question we already had. Somebody just gave me this emoji, which is interesting. Wow, look at all these questions. Great. I should read them before I put them up. This is a bad habit. Someone's going to catch me. Great White Painting Company said, when did you know you had enough revenue to take on a shop space? That's a funny question. Dude, I wish I could answer that question with an inspiring answer that would be valuable to you. But I did something that I probably wouldn't recommend to most people. And I just bought I figured it out. I committed. I didn't have a bunch of savings. I didn't have a bunch of work to fill the shop, but I had a dream. And I've watched that movie Field of Dreams enough where I figured if I built it, they would come. And no, as a part of what I saw as my competitive advantage in the future, I saw having a shop space and being able to do shop work and site work and marry them together. Sonia just laughed at me. We did this on a project for her. We took all the doors off the job site. That was a tight condo. I think that's a valuable thing for everyone on that project to not have the doors there. So we were able to execute on the doors, not on site. And that made people happy, and that built a competitive advantage that another painter might not have. So, I did it. I was not married. I didn't have kids. I was very comfortable having no money, and I believed in myself. And so, I got a shop space insanely early, and I could have gone out of business. It's not the way you really want to go about it. But that being said, I don't know. But I think a shop space needs to be part of revenue schmevenue. That's what Paint said. Yeah. I think if the shop space is, you first have to have a business model that you have. Like, what is your business model? Who do you serve? What makes you special? Then it's like, okay, well, is this going to give me competitive advantage and help me better serve my clients and be more competitive in my market, right? But if that's not your target market, then having a shop space to say you have a shop space, don't do that. Like, use your garage as long as you can until it's limiting your company. If you're serving people perfectly and it's not, and you don't see, you're not doing new construction, or you're not doing things where you want to take a lot of stuff out of the house. If you're doing basic repaints of exteriors and interiors, I don't think a shop, then you could have a storage unit for your tools, pay a fraction of what I pay, and you're all good. So I would say, you know, you want to make sure that if you go there and stretch, take that stretch, that you have a safe, that you're safe and you're smart about it. And don't do what I did. I mean, I think that what I did was kind of crazy. And, but if you do it, make sure you do it as part of a big plan. That's why I did it. I was able to take a big risk, but I had a dream and it was part of a bigger picture. And if that's the case, then you probably don't need to look as much at your revenue. Just can you cover it? Will you find a way to cover it? I knew I would find a way to cover it. I pawned tools multiple times to cover payroll early, like probably 4 or 5 years ago. Like, I pawned a sprayer one time to cover, like, I was living on a thin margin. That's crazy. Don't do that. Like, that's not the way to do it. I would be a much farther along in my business had I been more conservative and saved money and not hired employees. And I said that yesterday to my wife. Like, if I had just not hired employees for like 2 more years and saved and got better and like took on better jobs and not needed all the jobs I needed and like treaded water, I probably would be farther along than I am today. So you have to be careful with how you go about it. But, I couldn't tell you about revenue that you have today. I would tell you what kind of revenue, additional revenue, and how could it make, could it be more revenue and more profitable revenue if you had the shop? And in which case, now, if I could find a way to even justify or afford to cover the shop, it's an investment, right? It's an investment in your business, and it shouldn't turn to be profitable right away. But if you can float, I mean, my shop sat empty for 6 months. I had a booth for 6 months that we did 3 projects in, and we forced ourselves to use it. Like, we didn't have the work to fill it. But that's probably not the smart way to do it. And if I had spreadsheets with my numbers back then, and I had someone that knew what they were talking about, we never would have done it. So I don't know. I think it comes down to, why are we having a shop, and what's it going to do for us in the future? Sonny said, always love working with a paint company that has a shop space. It's super valuable. Yes, in high-end residential new construction and remodeling, a lot of stuff's going on, and time's an issue. And anytime you can take things off of a project and work on them not on site, that's an advantage to everybody. And I kind of intrinsically knew that, and so I felt a little more confident. Paint John said we actually got a shop because of admin employees and just to make sure they had enough space for shop stuff. That's a good point too. It's kind of awkward to have if you have admin staff come to your house, right? I wouldn't want my office manager working out of my basement. That would be weird, right? It wouldn't be very professional. That would probably erode company culture of professionalism. So that's another thing to think about is why am I building this shop? Thanks for your question. And that completes your question. I got to read the next one. I'm going to read it before I put it up. Oh, man. Alphonse Inc. said, what do you think of Benjamin Moore painting a 70-year-old house with plaster walls, new crown molding, and trim? Hey, man, that's great. I don't know why you wouldn't use Fine Paints of Europe. Why not start with that? Let's work backwards. Then that's what I would do. I mean, I think you might increase your material cost by, I don't know, 40%, 50%. I don't know. Whatever. Let's just answer the question, Zach. I think the Benjamin Moore paints for painting a 70-year-old house, great. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. I would use the top of the line Benjamin Moore paint. I wouldn't be using their lower grade. How crazy is it that commercial grade paint is cheaper, less of a lesser quality than what we paint residential houses, like a residence with. That is that not weird to anybody? Is that, does that not go completely against what you would think? If someone, if you didn't know anything about painting and you were like, oh, I bet commercial grade paint is more durable and higher quality and costs more. Right? That wouldn't that what we would think? A high traffic area might get a higher quality product than, oh, this is Mrs. Jones's house and she doesn't even have kids, so we don't need as high of quality paint for her house because she's not going to be very rough on it. Now this school over here, we're going to give it top of the line paint. It's insane that it's not that way, and it's actually opposite. So yeah, Benjamin Moore paint's fine, but I'd use FPE, especially if it was my house. So definitely use FPE. But if, and I was going to own the house for a while, and I cared about durability and all those nice things. But I think your Benjamin Moore paint is good. Oh yeah, right? Commercial grade tools, they're higher quality. What's going on with paint? I don't understand. Okay, I'm reading questions before I put them up. This is, has to be the rule. You can't just be putting things up. I'll get trolled. Construction Cameron says, can you explain your process of putty sand or putty prime sand putty prime? FP Fine Paints of Europe, Alphonse. It's the top of the line best single component paint you can buy in America today. They have an amazing line of paint. Alphonse, where are you located? What state are you in? It's super high quality paint, and you get what you pay for with paint. As we were saying earlier, I am absolutely melting right now. This is unbelievable. Better than being cold, though, right? I froze here one time with the AC on like this, and my teeth were chattering. Oh, in Long Island, man, find yourself a Fine Paints of Europe dealer and use some high-quality paint, my friend. It will change your life, and it might get you a whole nother level of clientele. Maybe. Hey, don't do whatever you want to do. Don't listen to me. But I would at least look at that. Construction Camera says, can you explain the process of putty sand or... Okay. Putty prime sand, putty prime. All right. If we're talking about new construction, first of all, what did you sell the job to do? Is this a... Is this commercial grade paint where we don't care? Or is this residential where we do really high quality paint? It's all kind of comes down to that. But generally, we like to putty our holes first, right? And then sand that, prime that, sand that, spot putty, caulk, prime. Generally, that's what I would like. That's what I would say. I would say you want to do as much of your prep work before primer that you can without wasting time. And then you want to prime, scuff, and then you want to do your last little bit of prep work. You want to lock your caulking in behind some primer on a trim job. And then you want to prime one more time. In a perfect scenario, like honestly, we won't do a new construction project and not use two coats of primer. That's our standard now. We don't do very much new construction because of that. For the most part, I would say, like, anything high-end new construction, like, you have to use two coats of primer to get the kind of finishes that we want to give. So we just would kind of put our foot down and say, this is what we're going to do. If you don't really want that, like, we're probably not a good fit. Because if that's not what you want, like, there's a bunch of guys that will just slap paint on, and we're not going to be competitive. But again, I know who my target market is, and I know what we do special. And I think that's really important. Okay, this is a great question. Lighthouse Painting Company said, any plans on ZK Finishing School Roadshow? Yes, there's lots of plans. Lots of thought has been put in and will continue to be put in around this concept. Whether we go a traveling ZK Finishing School, whether we set up another school on the West Coast and another one in the Midwest, that would be awesome. I think what I really want to do is get a brick and mortar in Rhode Island that we are producing an amazing, diverse range of classes that add a lot of value to a lot of people. And not just fine paints classes, but, you know, the whole thing. And I want to get, more than anything, I want to get really good at teaching, right? I think that's the piece that will make ZK Finishing School special, is if we are really good at teaching. Because then you don't have to be really good at teaching, and you can send people to us and we will teach them for you and get them up to speed at least in a way. So I begun to start. I just downloaded a few books on education and educating. It's called Pedagogy. Did you guys know that? I think the study of educating is pedagogy. Unbelievable word. It sounds way worse than what it actually is, doesn't it? But I think that if we could, the plan is to get really good at teaching. Because it's not very cost effective to travel to teach. It's much more cost effective to have 9 people come to me and teach them than it is for me to come to them. At this point, you know, we would have to, I mean, do I have dreams of having the Festool tractor trailer? Yeah, I do. And that might be what we end up doing, and having that. If you've ever seen the Festool tractor trailer that they travel around with, it is the coolest thing ever. And would it be awesome if we had a ZK finishing school tractor trailer that we towed, that we went from event to event around the country? That would be awesome. Do I think that's very likely? It's less likely than having multiple facilities around the country. If we could, like, not like a franchise, but like if we could get one running well, maybe we could do that. Because I don't know, but we are looking at doing, we are looking at doing one in San Diego. So an FPE training class at San Diego. There is a facility that I've been talking with somebody about that has spray booths, they have sanders, they have everything that we would need in San Diego. And we could potentially do a ZK finishing school in San Diego. But it's a very different story, because then myself, Dan, and Phil, and Carney have to fly to San Diego to teach class for a weekend and fly home. That's a 4-day thing now, right? Where for most of us, we're 3 days. Versus right now, I work the weekend. Carney works a little bit of both days. Phil and Dan work on Saturday. And it doesn't negatively affect the painting company. So I'm a little on the fence about trying, like, for right now, we're going to do what we're going to do really well, which is teach at our facility. And if we'd love to have you come out, we're combining the two classes back to back now. The sales and marketing course and the FP training are back to back now. They're Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So if you want to come to both, you could do it in one trip. And we're following all the COVID guidelines very strictly. But at this point, we're really not looking at traveling anytime soon, because I don't think there's going to be a lot of, like, conventions and conferences in person for a little bit. But the next time there is, we may end up, I've had people talk to us about wanting us to put on something like that where we travel to conferences. But the logistics scare me a little bit, to be honest. Let's see. Again, reading questions before I answer them. This is a good question. C.L. McDade Painting. Connor was just at ZK Finishing School. And he asks, benefits of rolling and tipping versus hand brushing. I think the major benefit to rolling and tipping is production on a larger surface, right? The reason that we roll and tip is mostly because when you roll paint on, you can put more paint on a surface faster, right? That's really the only reason that we roll paint. It's not because anyone loves paint stipple more than they love brush strokes. That's not what invented the paint roller. We roll because we put more paint on a surface faster. So when we roll and tip, we are applying paint to generally a flat surface. Like, they roll and tip boat bottoms a lot. Maybe not a lot anymore, but smaller boats get rolled and tipped. The big boats all get sprayed in unbelievable spray booths. If you've never seen one of those, I have a post way back on my Instagram where I went and visited a friend who runs the paint shop at a big yacht manufacturer, and they have these crazy spray booths that, like, 140-foot yachts can fit in, and they spray everything. But rolling and tipping on boat bottoms is very popular and common. So when we roll the paint, we can put more paint on, and then we tip it off with a brush. Whereas if we were going to brush it, we'd have to do lots of dipping and lots of working, and it's slower to do this same large size space. But obviously it's difficult to roll on paint evenly on a bunch of details and moldings and things. So we would, it might be easier to brush out a handrail than it is to roll and tip a handrail, depending on the shape of the handrail and depending on things. But I think really that what you're looking at is we're trying to put a same amount, even amount of paint on and lay it out nice on a surface. Rolling and tipping will help us put more paint on a surface faster. And thanks for your question. And that completes your question. Or no, no. Someone says that completes my question. I don't know. Listen to Akimbo. Somebody listen to Akimbo. Honestly, it will change your life. Oh, I didn't read the question again. I get excited. Ham PCE. That's probably not how you say that, but that's how I said it. Do you enjoy faux finishes and are they profitable? We do not generally get into faux finishing. We don't do faux finishing, so I couldn't tell you. I will tell you that if you get into faux finishing and you're good, you can charge some crazy hourly rates because the faux finishers are in demand. It's a very high skill thing, and if you can do it, you can probably be pretty profitable at it. But generally, it's an art. It's way more art than what I do. Like, what we do, we try to take the art out of it, honestly. We try to make it more of a science. I try to make it more of a science than an art. The faux finishing thing scares me because it's even more art. I mean, there's plenty of art in what we do, obviously, but we try to make it as predictable as we can. And faux finish is just not something that we got into. They are profitable, though. Anytime you have less competition, profit margins will be higher. That's basic business, right? With less competition, margins can be higher for profit. Okay. This is a good question. My friend Raptor NX200T. I just started my own painting company. How patient you have to be to get a lot of customers like you? Okay. Yeah, man. Well, life. It's important to be patient in life, son. No. Patience is very important in business. Patience is huge, actually. If you build it, they will come. And you have to wait for them to come. So if you build a company very intentionally, this is what I would say. Do your best to build your company intentionally. Proactively doing things, not reactively doing things. That's what I did for a very long time. It took John about 15 years. So you got 15. I just did that interview with Eric Adams from Adams and Beasley. And I feel it took such a load off my chest. I feel so much less stressed and less anxious, and I feel like I have a shot of doing something good here because he's been in business for as long as he has. Their company, I dream to have a company that runs as well as Adams and Beasley. Just from the outside looking in, oh my gosh, it's very, very impressive. But they've been doing it for a very long time, and it takes quite a while to build critical mass and get everything going before you can really be profitable and awesome. So I would say if you, the longer term, bigger profits you want to make, have a little bit more patience for building something special that will really turn out to be something in the future. But you need to, I would want to see you be as intentional about who you serve and about what you do special. What do you do and what do you do special? And then who do you serve? Who wants that thing that you do better than everybody else, right? If you're going to run a business, you should be better. You should do it because you can start your business because you think you're better at it than anybody else or than other people, right? Don't start a business because you're not really good at working for somebody. That's probably not the best reason. You know, maybe change you and be better at being on time and working for somebody. Build a business because you start a business because you want to build a business and you think you can add value to the market, right? Because you're competing against a bunch of other businesses. And why you, right? I have to wake up every day and go, why me? why is this client going to want to hire me? And if I haven't thought about that deeply with great introspection, then I'm going to have a tough time competing, right? I have to figure out, what do I do? What my DNA, what makes me special? What do I gets me going? What do I want to get really good at? And then who cares about those things? And then I want to build my whole company around that. And every day I want to move a little bit closer to that. You're not going to get there tomorrow. It's about having clear idea of what makes you special and then slowly chipping away, right? You start with this big block of stone and we're going to chip the David out of it, right? And it's going to take time, but we're going to know. Essentially, we're going to have an idea that David, what David will look like at the end. We're going to know that that's going to come out of this block. And we're going to slowly chip away at it. And we're going to be patient as the David starts to come to form. And, you know, could we sacrifice and get there quicker? Could we get a shape out of that stone faster? You definitely could. But we've picked David because we think David's going to be special. This is an insane analogy, but we think David, people are going to like David. David's going to be beautiful, right? And it's going to add value to the world and be different than all the other statues. And so we're going to take our time to craft David the way we have in mind. And we're not just going to be like, let's just hit the stone and see what falls off of it. And well, now that's that corner of the stone. And then let's hit the stone over here and just see what happens. And that's going to be this part of our business. And you don't want to do your best not to be reactive. I wish I had known that sooner. Reactivity. It's the same thing with life. Don't be reactive to life. The most successful people are proactive. They are being intentional about their behaviors. And they are, you know, they're not just whatever the world gives me, I'll take. Like, it's tough to get anywhere doing that. So be patient and have a plan. Play in the macro. Like Gary Vee says, get the macro right, the micro will all take care of itself. Someone said, I'm sitting here listening to you and honestly say you have grown with that podcast. I was just talking to my wife tonight. I'm like, I have to go do this podcast. I really didn't want to come do this. You know, I'd much rather go home and spend time with my wife. She's amazing. But this is, I've committed to do this podcast twice a week at the times that we do it. And because of that, if I'm going to do it, I got to get better at it, right? I'm going to do this podcast thing. I'm going to keep working. I'm going to try to get better at it because it's part of a bigger picture thing. I'm going to be patient and hopefully this podcast thing will turn out to be a benefit to my life and to my business. So thank you for saying that you think I've grown. Cause I hope I'm getting better every day. Let's see. This is amazing how many questions we have. I read this question before I put it up. I am melting. But I'm not going to strip in front of everybody. It's a little bit too intimate for me. Simp35, can you talk about Graco 695 Max? Yeah, I mean, I think I'm really excited to have the Graco 695 because the perfect example of why it's special is if you guys watched that video that I did when we sprayed with it might have been a 623, 523, something like that. So we were using a very large orifice tip to put a lot of paint on at once while we sprayed out a whole new construction with primer and sealing paint. And the 440 or the 395 in the same pump, that pump could not keep up with the tip size. Like, it could not produce enough paint. Could not build pressure and put out enough paint to spray out of, it's been so long now, 523 tip, something like that, right? Where if I had, now we have the Graco 695, you can run larger tips and you can, the pump will not, I mean, my 440, I think it did stop for a minute. Like, we almost fried that pump. It was working full speed consistently for 3 hours and it still couldn't keep up. But had we had a 695, we could have done that job probably in an hour less time. probably 2 hours less time for that one job for that one day, right? We could have saved 2 hours by having a pump that could handle the size tip we were using. So a 395, it's great when you're trying to do more production, when you're trying to put a lot of paint on fast. Brushwork said, if I can do my 1095 myself, you can do a 695. Oh, John said it's too big for one guy to get out of a truck. And you can, so the other thing you can do is you can put multiple guns. You can have two hoses and two guns coming off of one pump, which, correct me if I'm wrong, please. If I'm wrong, I'd love to know, but I don't think that's that awesome. I don't think it's that awesome to have two guns spraying from, because just get two 440s and run them. And I don't know if it's that amazing to have two guns coming off of one machine. Now, maybe it is. I've never really done it. But that doesn't strike me as the big, huge thing. But when you can put more paint out, that's amazing. No, we are going to spray joint compound through our Mark V. A Mark V is a significantly larger pump than a 695. And it has an intake tube that is so freaking big, you can't believe it. I don't do exterior production. You're right. And that's where I've never understood why having two hoses would be awesome. But I can see that if you're spraying out exteriors, which we don't ever do, then it would be amazing. So two guns, but why not just have two 440s? I don't know. It's probably better. It's better, obviously. But yeah, it's nice to not strain your pump when you get out your like primer gun. Your primer tip. Like, I used to spray primer with a 517, right? You have a 517 tip and you're spraying primer in a house. Now you get out a 523, you'll be done, I don't know, 30% faster, and time is money. We have not tested the mud spray yet, but I think at next ZK finishing school, we're going to be doing that. So yeah, I think when you're trying to do large amounts of spraying, having a bigger pump is better. Wow, I really went on a limb with that one, guys. OP Rudy says, what is a good way to learn the financial side of a painting business? Well, this book right here. Sorry, I put it in front of the mic. This book right here, The Painter's Handbook. That's a good book. Paint Contractor's Manual. That's another good book. Get a business coach. That's a great way. I think business coaching in our world is very valuable. Read books. There's lots of books about the financial, about business and finances and economics. And it's not rocket science. It may not be what gets you going if you got into the paint business because you like to make things beautiful. It might not be what gets you going, but it's a necessary evil. I would read some books. The Paint Contractor's Manual, Painter's Handbook. Trying to think. Profit First, E-Myth Revisited, books like that. But I'm not the go-to guy on the finances of business. Like, that's not my thing. All right, here we go. Simp35 said, what would you price to paint a living room with an accent wall that's 5,600 square feet? Yeah, paint school's got to talk about numbers with. I'm not sure if you mean paint the whole room. Oh, yeah, paint the whole room and the accent wall. Assuming that there's crown molding or no crown. Let's just say that there is crown molding, because that's what most of the rooms, at living rooms I paint, have crown molding. And a couple windows and probably a door frame. I don't know. We're probably $3,000 to paint a living room. $2,000, $3,000. It could be $5,000. I painted the living room for like $11,000 one time. Because of, we were transitioning from stain grade to paint grade, and they didn't want to smell any paint. And we did a lot of things that were not painting to make sure they never smelled paint. and a lot of prep work, and you know, but a basic repaint of a 5,600 square foot room, I don't know, it would probably be $3,000. I don't, it's hard to say. Have to be in the room. And have to know what the client wanted and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Simp said, what is your opinion of the modern craftsman and how Johnny felt your craft? I don't know what that means. Johnny felt your craft. The Modern Craftsmen are amazing. That is another beautiful podcast. I was lucky enough to be a guest on that podcast. That is what those guys are doing. I have a lot of respect for what those guys are doing. They've been in the podcasting game, obviously, a lot longer than I have. No, they're amazing. I love, I just honestly, I just like listening to the Modern Craftsmen. Those guys have a lot of passion. Johnny and Nick, I know both of those guys. They're both awesome guys. I've worked for both of them a little bit. And probably will continue to, hopefully. They're both really passionate guys, and I love that podcast. Great guys. And then Tyler. I mean, Tyler's Tyler. He's awesome. What a guy. All right. Oh yeah, Johnny has to be won over. Johnny's like he Johnny is Johnny. Like he has to be won over, and Johnny's like, what do I want? Like, would I like to work for Johnny? Absolutely. Will I probably work for Johnny? Probably not very often. Like Johnny's in a different, I think maybe as Johnny progresses into higher end markets, and but I don't know. He was a little, he's a, he's, yeah. He knows his stuff. Johnny is, you listen to that guy? That guy knows what he's talking about, and he obsesses over it. And it's, you know, it's, I have nothing but respect for him. And the skill set that he brings to a project is awesome. Omni26 Finish said, how to officially market yourself into the higher in projects, not looking back or settling for less. Come to sales and marketing course at ZK Finishing School, and we can spend 2 full days on that topic. But I will say, have a plan and execute the plan. Put yourself in the mindset of your ideal client. What do they want? Give them what they want. Stay small so you don't need to take on many projects, and get better and better and better at giving your ideal client what they want, and you won't have to look back. Oh, my man, the Beach Goth, another ZK Finishing School alum. On-site boxes shot with an airless versus doors shot in the shop with the same products used. Shot with an airless versus doors shot in the shop, same products used. I don't understand this question. I mean, I think in a perfect, especially if, like you really, A, I mean, obviously you have to box your paint. We should always be boxing our paint, right? Everyone knows that. Don't paint things with a gallon here and a gallon there and then try to put them all together later. That's a very risky thing, a very low cost of boxing paint, right? Maybe a 5 gallon bucket and some time, and a very painful result if 2 gallons. We're doing a project right now on the Cape. Very expensive. Guy's paying a lot of money for us to come out to the Cape and do this project, and it's being done because the painter did not box his paint. And 9 cabinet doors are a different shade of white than all the other cabinets and all the other trim in the whole place. And this guy is, like I said, very type A, very particular. And those 9 doors being the wrong color bother him immensely. And I told him when he came, like, there's, I cannot make those 9 doors look like the rest of it. It's a year or 2 old. There's no way I can confidently to you, to this client, to some clients, we could, right? Because they wouldn't be so concerned that the sheen was slightly off and the color wasn't exact. But the only way I could tell this guy, I could give you an entire kitchen and living room and like powder room area and bathroom and whatever, that's all the same, as if I do it all at once, right? So that painter who didn't box his paint ended up costing this client a lot. So box your paint so that when you go on site and then you go to the shop, the things marry up together. All things being equal, as best you can, yes, I want to use the same paint sprayer for both applications. That's not always possible. It depends on product and sheen. If you're talking about a white satin, yeah, we could be a little more, it's a little more forgiving. If we're talking about gloss, we want to use the same sprayers on site and off site. I hope that answers your question. Boxing your paint is taking all the gallons that you're going to use. Like tomorrow, they're going to box 5 gallons of paint. We bought 5 gallons of paint for that project. We're going to put all 5 gallons into a 5 gallon bucket. We're going to mix them together and we're going to pour the paint back into those individual gallons. Right? This way, when we go to paint, all of the paint has been mixed into one. It's all one color. And then we put them back into their individual gallons. Or you can, I don't know what Phil will do. Maybe he'll paint out, he'll use the five and, but probably go back into the individual gallons for this project. Because we're not, he's going to be brushing it and probably won't, he'll probably use 3 gallons. But I bought 5 because if I bought 4 and he needed a little bit more and I had to go buy a new gallon of paint, that's a huge risk that I do not want to have. So I would much rather spend a couple $100 for more paint and have enough that's all exactly the same for touch-ups and all those things, then you never want to run out and buy one more gallon of paint and go do that final section and then touch up with that gallon of paint. Oh boy, don't do that. If you run out of paint, lock in that old paint. I've had it happen before, and you save that paint. That is the touch-up paint for all areas except for these areas, which we're going to use the new gallon of paint for, and they will now be treated completely separately, like they're completely different colors, even though it's exactly the same. But it's from 2 different batches. And now with a white, it may not be as big a deal, but actually we're doing White Dove on that project and it was different. So you need to be very careful when you're mixing all your paints together and having enough paint so that you don't end up going and getting 1 gallon of something later and doing a bunch of touch up. Oh man, that is, it's just cheap insurance. I am all about cheap insurance. Yes. John said, ooh, having to buy that extra gallon, sweating bullets while we wait for it to dry. That is a horrible feeling, and it can be avoided. Oh my God, it's freaking 10 o'clock. You guys asked so many questions tonight. I have 2 more. No more questions. My wife's going to, no. I'm going to kill me. Thank you for pointing that out, Mikey. Beach Goth asks, this question is about color discrepancy or sheen differences when this is done. Ah! See? The follow-up question. Yes, so we want to box our paint and we want to ideally use the same paint sprayer application method for both things. Very important. Again, control all variables we possibly can control. This is our last question for the night, ladies and gentlemen. Borderline Painting says, spider cracking, comma, even when using the proper quick dry and caulking. Sorry, I'm tired and I'm getting a little bit ridiculous. I just said the word comma instead of just pausing. I would say, yes, we really only see 2 spider cracking with 2K Poly these days. And it's always, when we've seen it, it's when we used our premium caulkings that we would usually use that stay flexible. But then you put a very hard coating over the top of a flexible coating and you end up with spider cracking. So we use Tower Tech Accelerator, which is a fast drying premium caulking. And then we always prime over the top of it and then put our top coat on. And generally we don't have issues, but spider cracking on caulking with 2K Poly is a thing. And you really get a system that works for you. Trial and error. I'm not an expert on, I don't know exactly, but don't use the premium caulkings that you would think you'd want to use over hard 2K products. And I am literally sweating. I am melting. Oh yes, don't big stretch caulking is great, but if you're going to use oil, it's not, because you have to wait 7 days to put oil primer or oil top coat on big stretch. Wet paint, Mikey said I had spider cracking with big stretch when he used FPE oil primer too soon. I would say that's true. 7 day cure time for oil with big stretch is not ideal. Tough for production. Again, everybody, I hope this audio was better. This is going to be the new situation as long as it is. Thanks for watching tonight. Everybody go out and crush it. Crush it this week. 2020 is awesome, folks. If I see one more person post a meme or another person say, oh, 2020, oh, man. Guys, honestly, look at your lives. How 2020 is not that bad. It's not even bad. 2020 has been great. These years, they are what we make of them. First of all, even if 2020 sucked, the mindset of saying this year sucks is not very beneficial. So, let's talk about how great 2020 has been, because it has been great for most of us. Are there some people who are feeling pain? Absolutely, and I feel for them. But to broad stroke look at a year and say this year, oh my God, if you watch the news, don't watch the news, first of all. That you want my biggest piece of advice? The best thing I've ever done in the last 5 years was stop watching the news. I literally, like, I don't know any, like, I know the broad strokes of things that get to me, but, like, I don't watch the news. And if I look around in my world, things are great. People are happy. More opportunities than ever for people who want to work hard and go do things. You know, 2020 is a great year. All years are great if you make them great. Mindset is everything. So please, let's stop talking about how bad 2020 is. And let's continue to make it great. And let's do the best that we can. And let's keep our mindset where things are great. And let's keep our mindset that no one's out to get me. And the world's got my back. Even if it doesn't. It's better to think that it does, because that's what I can control, is how I think. I can't control the world. I can control how I think. And if I think that everyone's out to get me, I will not do as well in life as if I think the world is looking to help me. And that is what I can control. I cannot control the world, but I can control my mindset about the world. And I would encourage everyone to think a little, to question your mindset and to work on having the best mindset you possibly can, because it is the lead. It is a lead domino to all the things good in life is your mindset. You can see the same situation from two different perspectives, and it will determine how you behave, right? We care about our behavior. That's what I can control, is how I think and how I act. And so if I don't see things in a positive light, I will behave negative. I will behave not as well as I probably would have if I saw things in a positive light. Even if the world is out to get me, it's not going to help me be a better person thinking the world is out to get me. So stop it. The victim thing, the world is coming to an end. Even if you are a victim of something, it's not beneficial to see yourself as one. You know, we all have, the world kicks us all, right? But if we think the world's out to kick us, we won't act as to our greatest potential, as if we were just to think the world, there is some power out there that wants to see me do well. So if that's what you can make yourself believe, magically you will behave better. So 2020, awesome year. 2021 is going to be awesome. 2022, every freaking year is awesome. Because that's the mindset I can control. So, everybody have a great night. Have a great week. And I'll see you guys on Tuesday. I have an awesome guest. We're going to nerd out about paint. Incredibly talented guy. Stay tuned.